This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Steph One Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. For today's Feminist Movie Friday, we're talking about the 2017 drama comedy crime film, which is a fun list of genres. Deidre and Lainey Rob a Train, directed by Sydney Freeland, who is a trans and Navajo director, and written by Shelby Farrell. It stars Ashley Murray as Deidre Tanner, Daniel Nicolet as Marigold Tanner, and Rachel Crow as Lainey Tanner. And Freeland was born on a Navajo reservation in New Mexico to a Navajo father and Scottish mother. And if you haven't seen it yet, you can watch it on Netflix. It's really fun. I really enjoyed the music and the visuals. We were talking about that before, Samantha, that we both really enjoyed
it. Yeah, so yes. Watching it, I was like, I get a little wary coming into teen dramas, especially when I know, oh no, they're already set up to fail, essentially, like the family, the background, what's happening. And I'm like, I don't like these stories. They make me feel feels. And as I've told you recently, for some reason, I'm really sensitive to everything right now. But it was so good. It was so like uplifting. Just go ahead and put this in. We do not condone crime of any sort. We're not saying that, you know, this should have happened or whatnot, and that it was right or wrong. Just, you know, we enjoyed it for what it was.
We did. I love that, like, you're imagining the headline the next day is going to be Sminty condones crime.
I'm just saying there's too much of that past background juvenile court and juvenile like at-risk teens. And I'm like, hey, no, don't do it. But I get it, but don't do it.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts, because there are some things I was like, ooh, I bet Samantha has some viewpoints on this. I will say, and I'm curious about this as well, it did not make me miss high school at all, like not at all.
Right. I think it's really interesting. I love Shashir Zameda, who has her own podcast and is a comic icon as well. And she was in another recent show that I was like, she's so perfect. And her role in this made me like think of, there's always, hopefully, this is my hope, is that there's one who really seeks to help the students out. And she's jaded and she was like, I don't claim this, whatever. But at the same time, she knows the backgrounds and loves these kids, as well as the woman who helps Lainey. I know we're talking about it, but who helps Lainey in the pageant. I was like, huh, she's not the bad white woman character that I was anticipating. Yep. Yeah. But yeah, I did find that interesting. But I thought it was so kind. The movie was a very kind conversation about that. But yes, high school in itself is like, oh yeah, kids are jerks. Like that's...
kids are mean. High school is just a like rough, stressful, dramatic time. There's all these choices that are being asked of you when you really are still young and don't know what you want.
Right. Right.
that was one of the first things so clearly. I was like, wow, I really didn't. I don't miss this at all.
Right. I think there's a lot to be said. Again, we're going to talk about it. This is a lead up. So if you want to watch this before we start into our plot, you should go watch it. Because obviously we're going to spoil the hell out of it. But in itself, that I love the sister aspect. And I guess you have to have the bad friendships for a lot of these plots to see the goodness of the sister friendship, which is a whole different level.
Yes. And that's something we'll be talking about. Obviously, perhaps. But before we do that, we did want to go over the plot. So the movie centers on the Tanners, who are a multiracial family. You've got the mother, Marigold, father, Chet, who is sort of has been out of the picture. He shows up for a lot of it. And then the children, Deirdre, Lainey, and Jet. And after their mother is taken to jail, Deirdre and Lainey decide to, well, mostly Deirdre, who convinces Lainey, decide to rob trains to prevent Lainey and Jet from being placed into foster care and to make enough money to bail their mother out of jail.
Right. So Deirdre is a smart high school senior who sells answers to chemistry tests to make money in the hopes of going to college. And she also expands that business as well. She also is the valedictorian, FYI, and is trying desperately to get into college. Just to put that in there. She, along with her mother, also helps raise her younger siblings, Lainey and Jet. So if we talked about parentification, here it is. Once her mother is arrested after throwing an expensive TV on the floor while working at her retail job, and it's, of course, all seen and taped and recorded, which makes it even worse, is up to Deirdre to figure things out, especially when it seems that Jill is proving to be a break from her mom's single parenthood, you know? And it's kind of comical in that manner, but I've actually heard this for some of those, like, I actually have three meals. I actually get to sit. I actually get to
exercise.
You know, I have to exercise. Like, I don't like the environment, but compared to what it was, hey. So looking into her backyard, Deirdre gets the idea to rob trains to raise money to bail their mom out of jail. Actually, this was after her dad shows her a video of a train robbery with the main investigator, detective, white dude. Yes, he's the bad guy in this one. She thinks about the fact that she knows how these trains work. Maybe it could work for her. Here we go.
Yes, here we go. So Deirdre convinces Lainey to help her in this venture of robbing trains. And they do like a lot of practices and planning, and they bond as they're doing all of this stuff. And Lainey, there's this whole subplot where Lainey, who's very shy, she gets picked on, has this one friend, Claire, and not a great friend. Pretty mean and abusive.
Toxic friendship.
It's a very toxic friendship. It was one where I was like, is this ever going to redeem itself? No. Okay. So Lainey gets into the Miss Idaho pageant, thanks in part to the teacher, which really makes her friend Claire mad because Claire wanted Lainey to support her, I guess always being kind of the second fiddle in this relationship. Lainey gets the impression that her mom isn't supportive either because her mom won this Miss Idaho pageant and according to her was like going to get this reality TV show from it, but then got pregnant and couldn't do it anymore. And Lainey really interprets that as, you know, basically, your kids ruined your life and we shouldn't try because we're never going to make it. Or that's what she's getting, the message she's picking up. And this all infuriates Deirdre. So Deirdre makes her mission to build up Lainey's self-confidence, though she doesn't always succeed. Lainey's friend, Claire, friend in heavy, heavy quotes, continues to torment her, undermining her at every turn and even tripping her and giving her a bloody nose.
Yes, not cool. Nope. So meanwhile, Deirdre, who now has to take care of her siblings, misses a lot of school, also in part to the fact that she's robbing trains. Really concerning several folks. Again, the school counselor who we love, looking to help her become successful into and going into college. Again, as a way to transfer herself in a different, better school because she's got some type of success in helping kids in going into college. Yes. The counselor finds Deirdre out and Deirdre blackmails, convinces her to help them rob trains so that Deirdre can afford college. Essentially, though, it was this whole thing I love this movie too much. In which, yes, it kind of unfolds because they made a few mistakes, not realizing everything that they needed to do, even though quite a bit of the good planning, yes, as they're trying to figure out everything. Cop comes through, realizes, hey, it's teenage kids because they accidentally got caught. But you can't see their faces. All you see is the back of them. After realizing, hey, what is this? Oh, hey, comes to check on her, comes in, sees all the boxes, realizes what's going on. And Deidre convinces her, hey, the other valedictorian, do you really want something about cast iron just spoken? And for some reason, that tickled me. It made me very giggly. I was like, that's hilarious. I don't know why, but apparently talking about cast iron during valedictorian speeches is funny. But trying to talk about how this other girl's not as good, or this other person is not as good as she would be as a valedictorian. So the counselor agrees to be quiet about it and let her know what's going on with this other dude that's investigating, who obviously has a chip on his shoulder, because every time someone says, Mr., he's like, I'm detective. Mm-hmm. Yes. Which, so now Deidre's counselor is somewhat involved. And then, of course, Deidre hides the information from Lainey that this cop has come around the schools to try to figure this out. And the dad, who works for the company, also figures it out after realizing, huh, that's a gift I gave to my child, which appears out of nowhere and is part of the evidence of some teenagers are doing something here, .. And by the way, yes, he is a felon. That's part of the reason he's not around the family. And then also, he's just kind of like the deadbeat dad that is not around the family. And after he figures it out, oh yes, he figures this out. he shows up at their home just in time for a CPS visit. But because he's not supposed to be there, pretends to be the uncle, charms the CPS worker the entire time, pretending to be the uncle, confronts Deidre and Lainey about what they've been doing, and reveals to Lainey that the cops are on their trail. Of course.
Yes, because Lainey was very reluctant about this whole thing and has kind of been like, you know, any sign of trouble, we're out. And Deidre did not tell her that this was happening. So their dad, Chet, hangs around and gives them some tips and starts working with them about robbing these trains, kind of trying to take over the situation, claiming credit for Deidre's work, which is sort of a theme throughout this, of taking credit for other people's work. Deidre reluctantly agrees to accept his help, and they cook up an even bigger scheme. But as all of this is happening, the cop is closing in and decides to interview the students. Deidre and Lainey get into a fight when Lainey realizes that Deidre has been setting aside money for college, for her college, and intends to keep robbing even after they have enough to bail out their mom. Because Lainey was like, once we get enough for her to get out of jail, we're done. And I did like this quote with the cop where they're interviewing Deidre and he finds out she's the valedictorian. And he says, we're interviewing the valedictorian? Why are we interviewing the valedictorian? Where I was like, why would you? The smart person is probably good at robbing things. I don't know.
Right. So in all of this, it's obviously a small community, a very compact community, because the cop knows who they are. He's the one that tries to de-escalate the situation with the mother when she first got arrested. So it's an interesting, like, homey feel where they're trying to care for each other and truly understand what was happening. Maybe it's propaganda, I don't know, but it did feel nice to see that aspect of them caring for the people in their community. And during this entire time, as she's trying to think of the bigger heist, we see Lainey coming apart. Lainey is not doing too well. She is trying to she's just over it, ready to rebel, moving on. And Deidre realizes maybe she doesn't want all of this anymore. Maybe seeing what's happening in the bigger and bigger, like they're all already in felony level of trouble, but it's getting worse, and hijacking things that are like, hey, we're talking about possibly stealing literally mint money, which is way above the high level federal crimes. So maybe we need to rethink some things. Mm-hmm. And after the boy that her ex-boy is what we're calling, who she calls the gangster, and funny, like he's just a white, cute boy that she calls all of these things, who he talks about how he sells out of his grandma's attic.
Like he's like, who do you think I am?
It's just, you asked me to do this and I did this. Like, really? I'm not that cool. I do this on eBay. Right. And so she decides to take the money, all the money, and finally bail her mom out after making sure her mom knew that she was not happy. And we had this whole unveiling of what her mom does. But first, the CPS worker realizes that something is amiss, comes to confront the dad, who she's like, I thought he was the one. But instead, he's like, oh, wait, let me do this. And takes Jet away, runs away with him. Deidre again comes and has this confrontation with the mom. And the mom talks about what's happened. Like, she had saved all this money for her college, was so proud of her, got into a really bad accident because she was so tired from working so much and therefore lost all of the money and then went into even more debt, there was like a teenage pregnancy show that really just triggered her to the point that she had a breakdown and lost it. And to the point that the shop decided to charge her with terrorism on top mm-hmm. of theft. So that had a federal consequence to that. So yeah, it was a whole thing. And it was like, oh. And by the way, the mom, I know her from playing a main character in Flash. And I love her character in Flash.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that scene was really beautiful because until that point, it's not that you didn't, as the audience, have sympathy for the mom, but you're kind of like,
what is happening?
Yeah. Clearly your children need help. And she was just so like, yeah, I like it here. I'm good.
Right.
And then the scene, it was just really moving because it was the money she had made from the Miss Idaho pageant and she'd put it away. And this was her like explaining, like, I never regretted you. Everyone told me it was like a regret that I didn't get this reality show, but I was never a regret for me. And then just having this like montage of her coming home every day and checking the balance of how much money was in there. And she would just contribute to it no matter what. And being so tired and like coming home to fights or to just children who had wanted nothing to do with her. And you know, not that it's not painted in a way like the children were terrible. It's just what part of what motherhood is.
Right.
But she being a single mom and being so tired, and that's why she got in the accident, and then to lose all of it after all that time. It was really well shot and really, really beautiful, I thought.
Yeah, the flashbacks, she did a great job because you kind of already knew the story. You'd already seen it played out, but the mom was always missing. So they would impose like the mother, where was the mother? And here is the mother. Though she was in the background, or though she was tired, or though she was always there, but they just didn't see it from that perspective. So I thought that was beautifully shot. They did a great job with that.
Yeah. And it was really sad sometimes because she'd come home and she'd be so happy. Like, she'd be looking at how much money is in it and be so happy. And then she comes in and her children like are all fighting and she just like, forget it and deal with this. But yeah, I thought I really liked that scene.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Okay, so the cops come down to arrest Lainey at the pageant, which Deidre finds out about through the school counselor. Lainey gets in a fight with her friend, Claire, and Lainey is arrested. Deidre reaches out to their dad for help, and the counselor and the local police officer work on getting Lainey out. Deidre tries to provoke the train cop who has her record. And so Lainey thinks that Deidre's trying to get arrested, but she escapes from the school counselor and the cop who helped her, joins Deidre, and she demands that they do this together. And Deidre reveals, like, she's planning on recording him, like, sort of losing his and then getting him in trouble because he has this record. So they succeed in this. Deidre provokes him. Lainey films it. But later, the cop, he's not willing to give up, and he takes Chet hostage. But their dad, Chet, shows up and punches the cop in the face to free him. And the whole thing gets recorded. And the cop is placed under arrest. And Deidre negotiates with the owner of the train company.
Right. So in this, I think one thing we did forget to talk about is the dad who continues to say throughout, I'm a better father when I'm gone, when I'm not there. I'm just around if you need me. And it's obvious that he does love his children. Like, as bad as it seems, Freeland never really gets to the he's so toxic type of level. Mm-hmm. And he does run away, though. After taking Jet, coming to the pageant to support his daughter, he decides he's going to run away because that's what he does, arguing with the toy that his son, who obviously adores him, gave to him and to protect him. And he's arguing with, like, but no, I'm a better father when I'm away, da da da. And then when Deidre reaches out, he comes back and he's like, it's my time. I can do this. So he does redeem himself to that certain point. But he also does tell them, hey, it's in your DNA to be a criminal, which is really sad to me in every way it could be. But again, he does redeem himself, trying to come see him. Although the ending was super weird where he misses her. So their mom returns home just in time to make sure that the family doesn't get separated by CPS because CPS has discovered everything. She charges with Deidre, even though she is an adult 18-year-old, for leaving the children with the father. Although, as a CPS worker, this is not how this works, but I think it was intended. And if we want to look at history, yes, social work and CPS has really harmed the Native American community a lot. And there's still a lot to be said, and there's a lot of leeway that gives too much authority to CPS, especially when it comes to Indigenous families in the U.S. That's a side point, but I will just say what this looks like. But you see that happening, and everything gets resolved, and it's beautiful. Everybody hugs their family, comes together. Love it. Deidre, like, we flash forward 4 months. Deidre packs and gets ready for college to a tearful family goodbye. The sibling relationship between the two sisters is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. She passes a train and watches and thinks about her past and her future. We get to see, yes, like I said, the weird scene. The dad shows up too late to say goodbye. There's a little bit of disappointment, but kind of like, hey. And then we know that there's an attraction between the mom and dad still. So who knows what's going to happen there. End of story. Then we see like an end credit scene, the counselor who is really motivating the kids, talking about going to college and how she's going to help, kind of brings up the whole train robbing thing, which Lainey laughs about. And yeah, so everybody's motivated and we're all going to pretend every single one of them went to college and it's happily ever after. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice touch because that whole time I kept thinking like, oh, don't leave. It's complicated, but you get it. But I kept being like, oh no, don't leave. And then at the end credit scene, she's like, no, right. We're gonna do this. It was nice.
I do
it was
like
a
her
nice button.
As she walks away.
Yes. I mean, she went through some things with all of them.
Through some things, obviously, yeah. And I will give it to the casting. I don't know who casted them, but it was a very diverse group. Mm-hmm. I love that it was told from this perspective, from Deidre's perspective. I do love that we have a multicultural diversity, that the villains in this movie, if there was real villains, would have been the white men. And I see that. And government in itself. And just the downfall of a single motherhood and the constant like pushback. As well as she does have a conversation about how she was saving money, not necessarily just for college, but to actually apply. And they have this conversation about like, you can apply to the Ivy Leagues. You have money to do that. And y'all, it is we know this. If you've gone through the college process, and I'm guessing it's even worse today, I don't know. It costs a lot of money. I had to limit myself to sending out, I think, 3 applications because it was like $75 a pop.
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, I was like, what is this nonsense? And as a high schooler whose family could not afford to do that, I'm like, what? It is set up. It is a rigged system. End of conversation. But I think Freeland has done a great job in of making this in a positive note with addressing some of the things within it. Again, the diversity in that it's beautiful. I love that they are not playing up the disgusting Hollywood tropes in that you, even though she is a main friend, she's not the blonde, perfect shaped, obviously 25-year-old pretending to be a high schooler who is the main girl. Like, I like this level of like, huh, they're just kids. This is what high school looked like, not this whole supermodel level of high school. I really appreciated that as well.
Yeah, I thought that it was fun in that sense where there were a lot of tropes that I was expecting to play out one way and then they didn't. And that was one. And a lot of people wrote about how they appreciated the body diversity of that because she was, you know, an average in heavy quotes, but like, you know, average body size for a young girl. And there were just so many things that I kept because I haven't seen a ton of high school movies, but I've seen enough. And I would say all these tropes that you just know. And I kept waiting for them to play out that way and they didn't. And I did like, you know, it was tackling a lot of pretty heavy stuff, but it did it in a manner that felt hopeful and lighthearted, which you can have various conversations about those kinds of things, but it was nice to have a presentation of it that was not so like, everything is the worst and it's going to ruin all of your relationships and your family sucks.
I think one of the things I really appreciated about the movie is there's a lot of traumatic experiences for childhood and she addressed all of these and she didn't go too in depth, but she also was really careful not to trigger too many for those who may have experienced these things. Don't get me wrong. If you're triggered and it happens and it will happen. You have no control about that. You have no control in being triggered. Let's just be honest. We really wish you could, because I would like to be able to not have to, you know, go through a moment of like complete breakdown when I'm eating a certain type of food. Where I'm like, oh my God, I remember this from my past. That was not a good moment. It would be great if I didn't have to experience that. But I think she has a great making sure to keep it lighthearted. And I think that, again, this is considered a teen movie. Didn't realize this. But because of that, she wanted to tackle it enough, but not overwhelm where it's causing more trauma, which is what happens with a lot of these movies in general. And again, when we talk about inappropriate laughter, and when we say inappropriate, meaning you find this inappropriate, but for us, this is how we cope. I think this is kind of along those same lines in that field.
Yeah.
And also, we did pick out this movie because it is Native American Heritage Month. And this is one of the top rated films. And I see why, and I love it. And I'm really sad that it took me to go down this list during this month to actually see this movie.
Yes. Yes. And one of the things that's really important about this movie is that it was, because so often Indigenous stories are told by people who are not Indigenous, but this was an Indigenous person who was directing it and a trans person who was directing it. And you could just feel that. And I thought through all of it. And I did, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. I did want to talk about the family aspect and the sisterhood aspect. But first, we did mention earlier parentification, and that's an episode we've done in the past, that a lot of people, it resonated with a lot of people. And that was something when I was watching this, I was like, yes, Deirdre. So like having to play this role of taking care of her younger siblings and having to take on these responsibilities on top of like trying to get to college and on top of like making money to try to get into college, like all of this stuff. And it just made me think of like this whole idea of the hustle and how girls and women are really being expected to do it all. Like no one's asking.
Right.
Are you like, is this too much? Or is it, we're just being expected. Like that's the level is you better handle your own stuff. And if you can't, that's on you.
Right. Like what we see is the very like small, slim bit of the mother where she's just working and you don't know what's happening, to where we realize what she's done trying to do for the family. And then we come to the father who literally has not paid any child support, mm-hmm. but hands over $13. Yeah. But we also see that he leaves toys on the train track for his son. Like it's very cute the way he does it. Again, that does not absolve him from what he has done in the past and continues to do to the kids, essentially. But yeah, and we do see that breakdown as the oldest sibling taking care of her family, taking care of her siblings, trying to find her own way in life, really trying to come out of something that she wants the more in that conversation, and then having the breakdown of being an 18-year-old and figuring out how to get out of a thing that she doesn't like, but also being loyal to her family. So that divide with her, like taking the money and trying to make more money and then getting caught up in making that money, mm-hmm. is this whole big thing. And it is, like, that is the complication. And that is part of that conversation we had about parentification, feeling guilty when you're older, mm-hmm. Because you are trying to take care of yourself, and that is so unnatural. So that conflict, right. And we do get to see that, especially when it comes down to it. And I think they did a smart job in making this like two older sisters, because mm-hmm. the whole complex issue, it would have been even more complex to have an older brother and an older sister, because that complicated of who's going to be the caretaker is often laid on the girl no matter what, mm-hmm. typically. And especially when it comes to house care, child care, all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when I was watching it, I just kept thinking like, Deidre's so smart. She's so smart.
That little board she made, I was like, damn, yes. That's really good.
Yes. Yes. But like, as you said, that there were just all these things where she was set up to fail, all these obstacles working against her. And it's just, watching it, I was just exhausted. Like, this is way too much.
Right. Like, I could not imagine trying to figure out how to pay for the bills with the power going off, how to fight off CPS to keep your family together. So being the caretaker and constantly being there, as well as realizing I need to do this for my mom, who seems to not care. I don't know what's happening, right. But she seems to not care. Right. On top of the fact that she's trying to live her own life, which she really had high hopes for, which was dashed within a day. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also like this conversation for her to not be her mother. So when Deidre is talking to Lainey about her, I don't understand why this pageant is a big deal for you. We need all these other things. We need to think about, you know, the basic needs of our home.
Yeah.
And then hearing what happened between her mother and Lainey, and then hearing what's happening between Lainey and the friend, and realizing the bigger, you know, casualty in this level for her, like, oh, she is already low in confidence, but now we're really killing her spirit. And I'm part mm-hmm. of this because I'm kind of putting on the mother phase of doing my own things in trying to care for the basic needs, which again is that bigger conversation in homes that are financially and economically in trouble, is that you can't get to these bigger needs, these emotional traumas, because you're trying to care for the basic needs, and it becomes right. problematic in itself. And though they are doing the damned best they can, there's still that giant part missing and it can go awry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Watching it, I just felt like, even though they went about it in such different ways, the mom and Deidre had kind of the same, like, mm-hmm. this ambition of like more. And for Deidre, I feel like she lost herself in it, where she was just like, we could keep going. And she had to have that kind of human moment with her sister where she's like, no, we were just going to do this to get our mom out. It's like, I thought we were going to stay together. But I do think that narrative was really interesting. I think that there was that whole kind of narrative of pushing marginalized communities into crime for this basic survival, and then blaming these communities for it, because I mean, what else were they gonna do? And then like when that guy's just like, oh, it's valedictorian, why would it ever be the valedictorian? Well, right. There's so much working against you,
right?
Then this is the option for you, and especially like for children, for trying to keep their family together. I don't know. I just felt so it made sense. Like, your options are so few, then rob a train.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect, whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is the whole conversation with this as well when we're talking about marginalized communities. And again, what I've seen, and I don't think we have anybody in our listenership that would ever argue that these possibilities could happen. But the fact of the matter is, when the cards are stacked against you, there's only so much you can do. And of course, this was the overarching, like obviously sarcastic response of, we're going to rob a train, you know, because that sounds ridiculously like implausible. But when I see oftentimes, and it's not necessarily that they're just going for needs, it is literally a conversation of, I don't understand why we can't do this, but they can. And it's this conversation that I've had for a long time within my social work community of like, part of this problem is, yeah, these kids are angry. The movie in itself is like finding basic needs, realizing they can do it, realizing they can get away with it. So going for the more for this specific plot. But what I've seen specifically in marginalized communities is that they are angry because they're not afforded that same level of privilege. And so they will do what they can to try to equal it out or even it out with no regards to others, because there was no regards to them. You know, there's just this pattern of this conversation that we have to have that, yeah, when you talk about what is happening and it feels so, when someone is robbed, it feels like you're being violated. I get it. I see it. But when we talk about the underlying issues of some of the things that are being stolen are iPhones and silly things. But at the same time, it's like, but it's a luxury, but at the same time, it's a status. And there is also this conversation of how we are pitting our kids against each other when it comes to items like this, as well as the fact that people are tired of having to do the basic. I get tired of doing the basic, and I am fairly privileged. I get it. But as the person who was doing three jobs at one point in time, I was really wishing I could have been that one person. I was like, man, where's my uncle? Where's my dead uncle who's going to give me $100,000 because he's dead now? Like, I really wish I could have had that one. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want anyone to die. But all of that to say is there is that level of like, yeah, you have a whole level of privilege when things are not equal. And then because it's not equal, you're not able to meet the equity that needs to happen in order for things to be balanced out, because equal no longer becomes the even playing field. It just means you're handed some more and hope you can be okay.
Yeah.
Again, bigger conversation. We're making this a really big thing. I get really heated about it. I know I do. But there's this conversation of, yes, we are creating and fostering a community and an environment that says, this is your only option.
Yep.
Good luck with it.
Yeah.
Survive.
Yeah. And I mean, this was a, like we said, a lighthearted movie. And I think that there are considerations to keep in mind, but the way it was, I think it was beautiful and it presented all these issues in a way that didn't feel so like upsetting. But at the end, when they were like confronting the cop and recording him, I was like, this could go really terribly.
Right.
Like, I was scared because of our real world issues and how that could have gone. And I kept thinking, you know, yeah, these kids did this because they thought they had to. Mm-hmm. And then they could have died for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I found that interesting with the fact that, again, I think it also equates to the one with a superiority complex really needing to solve a crime and gave no care to who it was affecting. And when he makes the statement of it doesn't matter. All I need is that arrest, which is, it's an implication to, that's the belief of a lot of law and order. And that's part of the problem as well, which is also when we talk about the loss of life in general and then talking about, well, they shouldn't have done these things. But no matter what they did, they didn't deserve to die. They didn't deserve that. What is happening? And it's kind of that same lines of, I assume you're a bad person because people in your life are bad people. Or whatever the situation may have been, the system is corrupt, so therefore I will use my assumptions on you, and that will be law. That will be the end statement. And I think, again, they did play this out well as the fact that, like, I did see, I feel like, I don't know about you, when Deidre walks away from the white cop looks really confused. Mm-hmm. And she looks like she feels guilty for ruining his job. I don't know if that's the case, but she has a weird look. It's not satisfaction. Face is not satisfaction.
My first take was it was like confusion. Like she didn't know how to feel.
Yeah.
But it wasn't satisfaction. It was definitely more of a mess of emotions, I think. Like,
again, having to do what she had to do.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. And then I did want to briefly touch on, we've talked a little bit about single motherhood throughout this, but I do think I appreciated the way this movie presented the complexities of that. Like, you had the parentification aspect, but you also saw the mother's side and you understood it. Like, doing what she had to do, doing the best she could. A lot of things the system set up against her. But, it's just, when you see that scene when she finally is like, no, I was saving up for this, and you just thought, wow, even in this little montage, I'm exhausted for you. It's so much that is being put on her and getting just constant having to fight and having to work and having to do all this stuff and being tired. It's kind of the vibe I got.
I think it's an interesting concept to be able to see the main point of view for the siblings. So it's setting up for Deidre and her sister as the main characters. And then you see like the peripheral, as kind of like a, hey, it's not as completely as this, as well as the fact that I think it's a reminder for Deidre, which is not for everyone, that she does have people there for her. She just, it's a different way than what she needs sometimes.
Right. And that's not to say, like, as we said in that parentification episode, that can have major issues and long-term impacts. But I liked that they presented the single mother is like, well, this is what she was dealing with too. Like, it was very complex and I thought very fleshed out of, like, they all had these things that they were dealing with.
And it's a complicated conversation, again, when you don't have outside support. And we've talked about that. And what does this look like? And doing your damnedest so that you can keep the family together.
Yes. And speaking of, I mean, one of the most beautiful aspects that we've been talking about it was this bond of the sisters throughout the movie and seeing it grow. And I did really love how we got to see them kind of like be happy with each other and build each other up. And then they'd have these fights. And it was really nice to see them like make up from the fights as well. Like,
right.
It was always a pretty like, oh no, I've done wrong. I want to make up for it. Which again, like these are teen kind of comedy drama movies. So that doesn't always happen in real life, but it was nice. It was like refreshing to see this sister relationship bloom and have them support each other and really like fill in the gaps of where the other person was missing and like needed that support. It was really, really, really lovely, I thought.
It was.
Yeah. Definitely the heart of the movie, I would say, though. It was, I feel like the mother at that end, that was good. And then, yes, representation, as we said, it was refreshing also to see this, an Indigenous story that was told from an Indigenous voice, because that doesn't happen often enough.
Right.
And I did think that was interesting as well, because there was a theme, as I said, throughout the movie of taking credit for other people's work and what other people have done. And I thought that was pretty fascinating, because that has been what has happened a lot when it comes in terms of these Indigenous stories and who is making them and who's getting the credit for them. But you see like Deidre and Lainey be like, no, you're taking credit for what I've done. You're taking credit for all the work that I've put into something. And I was like, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think they did. Again, we talked about how the school like really looked like an actual, what I would have thought of as a high school, what I saw as a high schooler, instead of the glam squad that was like territorially around. I definitely had a friend like Claire. Definitely did. Not to that extreme, but boo, like trying to like gaslight me and so that I can be her, hype girl essentially, and never really being the center of anything. Right. Did have a friend like that. Wasn't lovely. It wasn't in high school though. It was more middle school, but like seeing that as a representation. But yeah, I think like having those kind of like looks and seeing what was happening with that, it was good to see in that level. Like not necessarily like, I don't want everybody to be like, high school's awful, but essentially like the actual look of the high school, they actually use real people, what you would see instead of this glam looking squad. And yeah, like everybody being represented well and like the diversity throughout. So it was nice to see that on top of.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think plenty of storylines, like I said, they didn't go how I thought and they kind of resolved in a way that felt more realistic in comparison to these high school films, glam films that you're talking about, where I was like, you'd get in a fight at the pageant. Yeah. That seems about right. Yeah, and I did appreciate that as well. And I thought it was a pretty accurate depiction of high school in a lot of ways. And it was interesting to see Lainey, like she's struggling with this self-confidence and like being in this pageant and kind of figuring out like her personality through that, or at least the personality like she'd been too afraid to perhaps show in front of people. And I did want to touch on too, before we finish up here, I think that shame was a big theme throughout this, of where you live and where you go to school and where you work and what you can afford and like what money offers you. And I just thought that was pretty powerful. Like throughout it, like I feel like there were a lot of things in the family they didn't share because of shame, because they were ashamed. Like the mom was ashamed of what she felt was like too little she could offer. And Deidre was kind of ashamed because she wanted to go into this, you know, big college or nice college and get out of where she was. When she wrote on her like application, like anywhere 200 miles from here or something, like just a lot of this shame and how it kept a lot of the characters quiet about things that, you know, if they hadn't felt shame of it, and then they could have talked about it and then maybe they wouldn't have had these issues. But it's also like the shame is a lot of societal stuff. Like it's not on them that they felt it.
Right. Well, I mean, we definitely touch on a little bit. Again, they don't go too deep, but like about mental health with the mother having a breakdown and what that looked like. And we didn't know exactly why. And honestly, when you first meet the mom, you really think there may be a psychiatric level of needs that we don't understand. They're not going to talk about, but we see what that goes through. And then the shame that Lainey is called out for her mom's actions at one point in time, Lainey being shy and really trying to find any confidence whatsoever to be seen in general. Again, she talks about how she just doesn't know anything. She's not good at anything. You have the teacher trying to encourage her. I will say, I feel like that was the biggest fantasy level, that everybody in the school was supportive of them. I was like, well, you know, that's not always true, especially of those who are in the marginalized community. But I do love that this, I wish it was a thing.
right. Yeah. But yeah, we both really enjoyed this movie. We recommend it. If you have Netflix, it's on there. It's a nice, it's a fun watch. It's not that long if you're looking
for
something.
It's not long. Yeah. It's not trauma induced. Like you can sit and enjoy it and laugh. Like it's a thing. And then just have a moment. You do have a little bit of willing suspension of disbelief. You gotta go there a little bit. Like I said, I guess I'm too caught up in that world. I'm like, that's not how it would have turned out.
No. Yeah, no, for sure. There were moments where I was like, oh no. But that's true with a lot of the things you watch.
But that doesn't make it any less as good as it is. Like we would 10-10 recommend.
Yes. Go check it out. And then let us know your thoughts. And also, what movie should we watch next?
Keep coming.
Yes. You can email us at stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram at @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.